of golden sings. See Lama woman, dressed in red, make a man lose his head. See Lama woman, black dress on for $1,000 she wears and she moans. See Lama woman. Cat, wink at a man and he wink back. Now child, see Lama woman, empty his pockets and wreck his days, make him love her and shoot my way.
That's Nina Simone with Sea Lion Woman from her Broadway Blues Ballads album of 1964. As you could tell, that had a really interesting hint back to the schoolyard. You could envision children playing in the schoolyard singing this song, and that supposedly is the origin, in fact, of this particular song, Sea Lion Woman. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, March the 25th, and we return to finish off our discussion of yesterday, in which we're talking about women and identity and class and race and culture and power. A lot of interesting reaction to the discussion yesterday. Almost all of it by men, which I thought was very interesting. And so today I want to talk about your identity as a woman and as men in the lives of women. How has this notion of identity and power and culture and all of that fashioned a different idea in your heads about women? Have you changed at all in the way you perceive women? Of course, people call up and say, oh, no, I was always very, 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 very feminist, you know. But really, how have we changed? And what are the impediments? Because they are. Yesterday's talk, I said that there seems to be a kind of internecine conflict, that this notion of feminism or womanism, gender politics, is rooted still. It hasn't gotten rid of these impediments to true coalition building. And maybe that is exactly what is desired, no coalition building. It seems to have been, as you look over the years, that there is a kind of warfare, pull and tug, essentially between white women, white men, in a white world, over the power to rule everybody. And this is where they forge agreement. White women and white men have the same kind of outlook in terms of the power that accrues to them to rule the world. And so with that in common, they don't discuss these other things. They understand that that's what they have in common. What they are discussing and where the conflict arises essentially again between white women and white men in terms of world domination or the domination of their world as they define it, is really to, if you really understand the dynamics of that, you get to understand that they agree on this point, it seems. And really what they want to discuss is to what degree would white men devolve some of their power to white women. Now, the feminist movement was supposed to have brought women of all backgrounds together, that there was a shared interest. And in my view, that has just not been the case. There has been an assumption that as the white world defines reality, so is reality. And so for people like me, for example, I have an entirely different view about what it means to be a woman. And in my view, in the way I interpret my reality, my culture is important to me as a Caribbean woman. My upbringing is important to me. My values are important to me. And my consciousness also is very important to me. And that consciousness is highly political. And it has not been my experience that I have actually had women, white women, come to me ready and willing and open to accepting these things as being valid and therefore to be respected. I differ with a lot of things. I also agree with a lot of things. But what I find more often than not, I find that there is a resistance. There is this insistence, the same kind of mindset that they are fighting. We find it the case that they actually are practicing it. They are the part of it. So how, or is this something that can be broached? Should it be broached? Whose job is it to do so? And this is a point, I think, of Women's History Month. This is something that should be openly discussed. How much has been lost because of this intransigence or this insistence that is a kind of cultural imperialism, a kind of chauvinism, for lack of a better word, that we know better than you do, and therefore the leadership of the women's movement is practically all white. The concerns are the concerns of a particular class within the white female world. The power is wielded in the same way that men wield the power, which women allegedly object to. And I brought the example of Hillary Clinton. Is that the kind of woman that we find exemplary of what womanhood should be and power and the way she uses power and the way she assumes that position and the way she actually got there, taking advantage of all the things that women's supposed to reject, you know, this notion of treat me of the basis of my own value, not because, you know, I could get into the gutter and fight with you. What is therefore our consciousness to be? What should we be discussing? Your thoughts at 888-874-4888. And while I await your calls, I'll just add a little bit onto this. I have no problem, none whatsoever, about standing in the comfort of my culture, of my identity. I have no problem with it at all. I have no desire to import something that I consider alien to me. And I also am the product of a colonial society, which taught me a whole bunch of things about your sense of identity, your sense of place, and your sense of personal power, because you had to deal every single day with a virulent form of racism. You are, in fact, you are exploited. You are diminished in your own country. You know, I'm singing Bayan Bonnie Bank and Bayan Bonnie Bray, and I had to do the R's just like the Scots do. When the sun shines bright on Loch Lomond. Really? I come from a land of steel band and calypso. So Bonnie Brays have nothing to do with me, and I want nothing to do with them. But we were compelled to learn this as a process of alienating ourselves from ourselves. This is a huge fight, I think, because all over the world, there are lots and lots of women who are coming up and who have lived in circumstances such as this, where because of imperialism, because of colonialism, because of just being taken over by some foreign entity, the identity is severed. And I wonder whether there has been a cogent response from white feminists to this notion that they have, in fact, cut themselves off from a fantastic opportunity to realize the fullness of the movement. From Dallas, Sarah, you're on the air.
Greetings to you, Utrice.
Thank you. You too.
Yes, Utrice, and greetings also to the PRN listening audience. Utrice, you've said quite a mouthful and some of the same things that I've been saying. I, as a black woman in my 50s, I feel the same way as you do. And I have never gotten myself caught up into this feminism category that I see a lot of black women get caught up in, this solidarity, this sisterhood of we are all women. Because like you, I come from a different cultural background, ethnic background, and that baggage that is a part of racism, white supremacy, of which white women have never fully addressed within themselves and within their menfolk, is something that I can't see myself becoming a part of that, because all I'm seeing myself being used as is whenever they want to have, they have a tribal infighting with the men, and as you said, they're trying to get a bit of the power base, then okay, we're all women, we all need to come together, we're being oppressed, but I'm also being oppressed by you. I'm also being oppressed by white women as well as white men. So there is no equality. There is no co-share. All you want is to get large numbers of women in a movement to say, okay, I have all of these women behind me, and now you're going up against your men in order to get something from them. But as you said, the power base is no sharing. It's all white women at the top. Just like there's all white men basically running and controlling everything. And you see it in all movements. You see it also in the gay movement. It's the same thing. Blacks are also suppressed and whatever, but the black gays that are in the movement, they're not in leadership position. They're only needed in for the numbers, but not in the co-sharing. And as you said, there's no respect for your heritage. And I feel the same way too. As a person with some Caribbean leanings, my sort of so-called conservative, as they would say, upbringing in the way how you think, and as you said, the colonialism that we were inbred into us, it's a total different upbringing. Now our needs and our wants are very different from what white women see, and this trying to say, okay, we are all the same and we all need to have the same goals and the same ideals, it's not. There is no respect for people to really want to sit down and listen to what people want, because if we go back to the very early founding of the women movement with Katie Stanton and Susan B. Anthony and Ida B. Wells and how they treated the black women in the early movement, it was always about white women want to get the vote before anyone else. You know, we want to get the vote before the black women do. We want to be, even though we're all women, but we still want to be considered more of your superior than you.
So what should be done in this situation?
The only thing, Utrice, as I said, we cannot teach white people anything, and that is something that black people always have to do. Oh, we got to educate them, we have to teach them. No, we need to educate, we need to teach ourselves. We cannot teach white people about anything. They are going to, people who are in power, Utrice, and got this power, they are not going to be in a position to share it willingly with anyone. You got to take it out of your head, Utrice.
Let me ask you this question. Do you feel exploited or discriminated against by black women?
And within each group, yes, you have your group because you have your schism, you have your, as they would say, these little classes, you know, cultural identity or have to do with your financial resources, where you went to school, for instance. That plays a big part in a lot of these women groups, because like you see with the Jack and Jills and the Links and all these different organizations we have within the black community, where you work, where you live, those type of things. No, we model ourselves, because a lot of these so-called black progressive organizations, they model themselves off of racist white organization. So the same hierarchy that they have of classism and everything, the same things that you would find in some of these black so-called progressive operatively mobile organizations. They do the same thing, because women coming from a first-generation college grad who happen to scrape and work their way through college, they're looked at very differently than say a family who is third-generation college grad. So we see the same thing within our group, because unfortunately for us, we have a wrong model that we have used for our model, which is a European model. And that is what we have patterned ourselves on, and on until we shake it off completely, we still have that parochial colonizationist mindset in the things that we do. We see it all around us. As much as we might say, oh, we are black organizers, we are pro-blackness, but your modeling that you have done, it has come from the European way of doing things, the way how they have set up their institutions. We have unfortunately taken those same things. And we could call it that we're trying to uplift the black people, but you're doing it the same way how you see the white people are doing it within their groupings.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks for that. Let's see how people react to what you're offering today, Sarah. 888-874-4888. How do we deal with this situation where a potentially potent political force is being supplanted by the same contradictions that obtain in the male world, and this is where the tension exists between men and women, but between white men and white women, basically struggling over the power, to whether they should share the power, how much should they share power to rule just about everybody else. Now, am I wrong in this assumption? Am I wrong in saying that this is where the women's movement, as we know it, really has come? Is this a bad reading? Am I off beat here? What do you think? 888-874-4888. I told the story, I think, once before, but it's worth mentioning just to illustrate the point. Many years ago, there was an effort to begin to start up a women's magazine, and I received a call to come and talk to the people who wanted. They were looking for an executive editor to head up this magazine. It was to be a women's magazine. So I get there and I meet the person who asked me to come, and it was on Madison Avenue, and the entire floor was being reconstructed. So there was this little corner of the floor that was cordoned off with these partitions, and that's where we began our interview. And shortly after we started talking, just generally asking about my ideas and what do I see the magazine being, if I were to head it up, what would it be like, and what would it be like for consumers of this magazine? And within a short time, this woman just shot out, literally like a jack in the box. She just sprang out of her seat and she said, "I'll be right back." And I thought, well, that's a real urgent call to the bathroom. I'd never seen a reaction like that. So I'm sitting there waiting, and she comes back with three other people. And we are all five of us, three other people, herself, big four, and I'm five. So we're sitting in this little tight corner. There weren't even enough chairs, couldn't even fit in there to accommodate everybody. So some of them remained standing. And she said, tell me again what it is you were saying. What were your thoughts? And I said, well, you know, I again repeated some ideas that I thought would work very well. And she says, what did I tell you? Isn't she terrifying? I had never in my life been described as terrifying. I did a quick check. My horns were retracted, as was my tail. I did take a shower. I did brush and comb my hair, you know. So I don't understand what was so terrifying. But, of course, we understand what it was. To complete the sentence, isn't she terrifying for a black woman? That's the discussion. And it just blew my mind. So I didn't have the heart to tell her that for the purposes of our discussion, I had kind of, you know, kind of gone slow so as not to outpace anybody. If I had, you know, if I had operated at normal pace, everybody would just jump through a window or something. I couldn't understand that. Never been described as terrifying before. And it really, to this day, it bothers me that that would be the word somebody would use and think it to be a compliment as opposed to a window into her soul. And it's a woman talking to me, another woman. Allison from New Jersey, you're on the air.
And you, Teresa, and thanks a lot for your show. You always put so much out there that I think I have this great thing that I want to say, and then I hear some more of your discourse, and I kind of lose it. But, interesting point that you just made, because apparently there's nothing more terrifying or scary or threatening than a black woman who has some intelligence and the will to express herself. That becomes a very threatening specter, I think, in everyday American life for certain groups of people.
Wow.
You started off asking about Hillary Clinton, and I've asked myself the same thing many times. What is it that's supposed to be so great about this woman, other than that she was married to this guy who had very questionable... I think very questionable policies, and that she's willing to do just about anything or say just about anything to climb the political ladder, which I guess makes her qualified for the job. And then back to your question about how do you see women? What is a woman? And I would never profess to try and define womanhood or what a woman is, other than biologically there's some very apparent things about the difference between men and women. But everything else to me seems to be a social construct. And I'm sure you're familiar with the book Brainwashed, and I can't think of the fellow's name who wrote it. But he talked about how sometimes we are just walking, talking composites of somebody else's idea of who we should be. Mm-hmm. And I find it so difficult, mind-boggling, to try to get back to square one and figure out what would I as a black woman have been if I had not been taught that somebody cut down a cherry tree and could not tell a lie, and he was a white guy. Somebody invented all these wonderful things. He was a white guy. Somebody invented calculus and knew everything, and the Egyptians didn't build the pyramids. Aliens came and did that. And you, black woman, you're at the bottom of the food chain. I think there's a lot of lost potential. I think women are vessels of great opportunity, great potential. And oddly enough, I think that we're defined by our oppression right now. I think we're defined by what we're not able to do. And the way out of it is to figure out what it is we'd like to do who's stopping us from doing it, and put together a plan to stop that. And that's pretty much all I can say about it right now.
Well, that's profound, profound, profound. Thank you so much for that contribution, Allison.
Thanks for the opportunity to vent.
Thank you. From Philly, Clara, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, Yatrice. Good to talk with you again.
Same here. How are you? Thank you.
Good. I want to follow up on something, some ideas that Sarah put out, because I didn't hear the beginning of her statement, but I heard it from the middle to the end, and it was about the hierarchy in the black community. And I've been thinking a lot about this since my last call regarding the six men who are in difficulty right now. I forget the name of their group,
IRP6, yes.
Yeah, IRP, yeah. But anyway, I thought about that in terms of them. In terms of a group of people, this group, I know that my family was a member of it at one point. I call them the Black Bourgeoisie. And they still exist, only they're not called that anymore. Totally out of touch with the majority of the black community. I must say it takes deliberation and thought and action to actually, quote, resign from that organization. Often by your behavior, you get pushed out, which is a blessing. But anyway, I wanted to say that I think that as far as Hillary Clinton is concerned and people of her ilk, I think what we're seeing is a representation of the total decline, and not just decline, the debasement of our entire culture. It's just a symptom, the fact that this type of person would be seen as a model of leadership in this country, male or female. And I think the other person, I didn't get a name, the last person who spoke,
Allison.
But yes, talked about the fact that she was married to a man whose policies were, I guess, questionable. They're immoral people. And I think it's important to label things as they are. And I know I don't mind getting in trouble for it. And I just wanted to, I guess that's about all I have to say right now, unless you wanted to engage me further.
I was wondering, with regard to Hillary Clinton, do you believe that the desire, as it's portrayed as a desire, major desire, to have her in a leadership position, is it because she is very, man-like in her position, in the way she carries herself? She portrays a strength that is beyond female, if you will. She's not demure. She's not anything like the typical female. And that, in fact, is a plus in the eyes of society.
Well, that might be part of it. I don't think that's the basic part of it. I think the basic part of it is that she represents she represents the leadership that we have chosen in this country, which is basically a sociopathic leadership. I mean, you can be strong without being sociopathic. But, you know, I thought of Madeleine Albright, for instance, the other day when you were talking. I was thinking about her as the kind of woman who could say things that a man couldn't say. Like I said, Obama can do things that a white president couldn't do. Madeleine Albright said it's okay to kill children. That's basically what she said. A man couldn't have gotten away with it. That's what I think.
Thank you.
It's the same syndrome.
Thank you. Thank you, Clara.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Mike from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I hope you are, too.
I am. I am very fine. I am a man, as you can hear, so I just wanted to know, can I speak?
Okay, we'll tolerate you since you're a man and all.
Thank you. What it is that I've been an activist, and when I came to New York in 73, and I was in my teens, very idealistic. I was very fortunate enough to be able to be included in the Gay Liberation Front. The Gay Liberation Front was really founded from a lot of other organizations, the women's movement, the Vietnam War. In other words, gay was really about inclusion. It was saying that because we're gay, we should be able to identify that the names that we're called is just as inefficient or callous as what other people are called. So that there was a movement, which was quite a heady time, where we were sort of all connected politically. However, with life and reality intervened, that basically what happened is that with the women's movement, a lot of women who were lesbian were sort of pushed out because the movement, Betty Friedan and others who were very powerful in the movement, really got concerned about that. And they felt that they wouldn't, their message wouldn't be heard if they had lesbians in the room. So that was sort of the beginning of many other sort of disenfranchisements of different groups of people. And also, having been lucky enough to also experience something of the Panthers, which is also another interesting time, is that also I had found that Bobby Seale really didn't want black women to be in a white movement. In other words, the women's movement was seen as white. Bobby Seale really felt that the Panthers was much more important, than that men, black men and women should really work on issues that pertain to them because they were sinking fast. So black women really never, I don't think ever really got a chance totally to really get together and really look at issues that really affected them personally, like the women's movement did. So therefore, I feel that what I'm seeing today, of course, being a man, I mean, and also being lucky enough to come from an era where I was with women who were really forging a path, I just really see now how black women are still sort of floundering, and I don't mean that as a put down. I see it as a definitely impacted from that moment of that time that they were told that other things were more important once again. And so there's a little bit of culpability, but I think most of it did come from black men. I think that's still happening today. I think that also the women's movement or black women's movement, I have faith will happen, and will happen in a very different way. But I have to say that also, I think for black women, there also is the issue. Sorry, I'm going on, but I just feel strongly about what you said.
Making perfect sense, and it's instruction. So we listen very, very carefully.
Thank you. Yeah, I used to sort of discount the activism, forgot all about it, but I'm realizing how important it was in my life. And so, to make a long story short, I mean, what I see a lot of black women is also being sort of hoodwinked again by religious clergy who are affected by white missionaries who are now also sort of putting that onus on them so that there's still not a lot of room to manipulate or to grow, unfortunately, and I think it can happen. But I do get horrified when I see reality TV shows where black women are not supposed to get along together, that a lot of things are really petty, and that the more important thing, I think, is the down low age, all that stuff was really coming from men in prisons, pretty much, black men in prisons, and that the ministers are even hoodwinking women, black women especially, unfortunately, to sort of toe the line because the ministers did not want to do the hard work of going into jails and doing rehabilitation, talking about AIDS and HIV. It's more easy to scream, you know, anti-homosexual epithets than to really get in there and do the hard work. And so I think black people as a whole are not being led, but I think also it's very important for black women to have some idea of the history, because I think that it's ironically, the good point is there's not as much work to do. I think that the work is really about letting go of a lot of society's demands and to be able to just simply communicate, which is what I hope for, and hopefully it will happen.
Wow. Well,
yeah,
you've said a mouthful.
Yeah, I know. That's what I experienced. And being very idealistic now, I really see how there is a connection between the history of the movement and that I was very lucky to be with very strong women who were lesbians, because we even went on the David Susskind show once. I don't know if you ever heard of that show, but...
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it was a wonderful time because they got up there. I was watching because a friend of mine from high school was in love with one of the ministers, Magora Kennedy and Barbara Love and Barbara Giddings and all these women who were just wonderful and so fresh and new and so proud and so happy. And unfortunately, they were sort of pushed aside. So I think all I'm really adding to your argument, which I think is very good, or your thesis, I think is excellent, is just the other piece is that also even sexually women in the women's movement weren't allowed to be sexual women. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And love mm-hmm. other women. Do you know what
Thank
I mean?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mike, for that contribution. Big
what
time.
Do you think about it?
Well, I look at it this way.
Mm-hmm.
There are problems that are within the group
mm-hmm.
wrestling with a bunch of things. There are problems between groups.
Mm-hmm.
And on both counts, women lose or have lost because they fell victim to these quote, rules that apply.
Good point. Very good point. Yeah.
How could, for example... If you're going with the idea that women are nurturing and women are more understanding and women, you know, if that is the line that you're taking to advance your cause,
mm-hmm.
but you have problems with gays and lesbians,
mm-hmm.
it just doesn't jive, you see?
Right.
I'd say this is also about in the African-American community, you have so many ministers and preachers
mm-hmm.
who are virulently anti-gay.
Uh-huh,
and
right.
and yet I know the story.
Mm-hmm.
I know their story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is the kind of hypocrisy that you get.
Yeah.
It retards, I mean, a really incredible moment to build a coalition against these entrenched ways of thinking that basically, you know, assail everybody.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what we're looking for. Are people grown up enough by now to understand mm-hmm. that they need to get over some of these things and get into dealing with people? Like, we're having a very frank discussion on this program.
Mm-hmm.
Many radio stations would not allow it. They wouldn't even broach it. They wouldn't tolerate people expressing their thoughts as, you know, and have those thoughts be regarded as valid, whatever your thoughts are.
Well,
I'm
that's
interested
why I listen
in,
to you. Yeah, that's why
what,
I listen to your show, because you're genuine, yes.
You know, what your experience is the story that you're telling, and that is valid.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we begin to push, you know, I think it's important to be openly critical
mm-hmm.
of the women's movement. It's important to be openly critical of black leadership. It's important to be openly critical of the government, because in the end, their acts of omission or their acts of commission end up harming a heck of a lot more people than they help.
Well, talking to you, I realized also that it was sort of a double whammy for lesbians, because not only were they sort of disparaged from being in the white-dominated women's liberation group, they also had decided themselves to leave the men's group. And this is early, this is 73, and there were actually meetings weekly, which were just wonderful, where we shared where we're all going through and railed against Anita Bryant, who was the big ogre at that time. I'm dating myself. But I hadn't thought about it until I talked to you. I think that lesbians really got a double whammy in that they weren't accepted by the gay men, because they felt that gay men were going to turn it into what it is today. The movement is very corporate, basically, let's say that. And
mm-hmm.
there are certain ways and codes to be in what you have and what you own. Not everyone, but there is a big part of the gay movement that sort of took that turn. And then so they didn't speak to men, gay men or white men or men in general, for a couple years. Daughters of Bilitis left Gay Liberation Front. So, and they were right. And unfortunately, the woman who spoke said, well, we don't want this movement to turn into just two men having a boutique, you know, and unfortunately, it was about that kind of power, that the white gay men even took power away from the movement itself, which was much more holistic and much more embracing. And so, yes, I hadn't thought about that, but women had sort of gotten a double whammy from both organizations. So I just wanted to say that, and I really enjoy you putting your thoughts out there because they're very interesting, and I appreciate that. So thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
I appreciate your call. Thanks so much. Allie from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Latrice. How you doing? I don't know if you have anything to say after Michael, but I will say. But I do wanted to say two things. One, I have a comment about what Allison said. I just had to go back to what she said. But I wanted to say that I come from a family. I have four brothers. And I will have to say that in my family, as a Latino, it's very unusual. But the reason that I'm telling you this is because about 2 weeks ago, I was talking to my sister, and we were, you know, going back to what we have done as women and how important women in our family, in my family, are. Mm-hmm. It's just, every time that I tell people this, you know, being a Latino, they just so surprised. But, you know, we are very important. We make a lot of decisions in our family. And mm-hmm. then, you know, this is something that I just wanted to say. But going back to what Allison said, she said that black woman are at the bottom of the barrel. And I just wanted to go back to that case about how the white woman movement, the feminist white woman, were exposed. So is that lady Gloria Allred, who is a lawyer, especially
yes.
when the dominant Straukan case came around, the former IMF. Remember that case? That he sexually assaulted the African woman from, I think she's from Guinea, in New York City.
Yes.
A few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This group were very exposed, especially Gloria, because none of this white feminine group came to that lady's help. And none of them actually supported her. And remember how they brought that woman down, saying that she has overpass her visa here and all that. Mm-hmm. And none of those groups, and then the reason that I have in this comment is because she said that the black woman is always at the end of the barrel. And that is true, because not only this woman, Gloria, right away when Tiger Woods have all those affairs, she that woman, Gloria, came to the help of this woman, or one of the women that was one of the mistresses of Tiger Woods. And as a matter of fact, she even got $10 million out of the deal. So I had never seen a case where Gloria had come to the help of any woman of color. It's always the group of the white feminists is always helping other white women. And I just was thinking about that when Allison was talking about, I was specifically thinking about that case of Dominique Strauss, how this woman, actually, the New York Post really, really exposed her with her overstaying her visa in this country. Okay, so that's what I was just thinking about that case, and then how you. I didn't listen to your show yesterday, but you're talking about Hillary Clinton. Another thing about Hillary Clinton, how these all the white women, but they're definitely going to vote for her, and how a lot of these black women, they don't really know what Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have done against people of color, and the way that she expressed herself when the support. Supposedly, they had killed. The terrorists that they said that they killed in Pakistan. I forgot his name, but you know that's another thing that she showed a side like it. I could sit around and have a beer with another man, and I'm at the same level, and that's the reason that a lot of people are going to vote for her. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ali. Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Yatrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Wonderful show, and thank you to all the wonderful, smart ladies who have called in. They really have me thinking here. I just had a few thoughts. I'll skim through them quickly. Number one, I wonder sometimes, you know, with the culture and the media we have, why such shows as, because I have some friends, they're mid-30s to and early 40s women, and they all watch these shows like NBA Housewives and Orange County Housewives and things like that, where these women are all catty to each other and being mean to each other and fighting, even physically fighting. And I wonder what the fascination is with that with a lot of women, especially in that age group. That's one of my thoughts. Another thought is I was sitting here thinking about the powerful women, basically of the world and in this country. And you have people like Margaret Thatcher, who's no longer alive, Hillary Clinton, and Madeleine Albright. These women who basically they have these heartless attitudes and policies. And I wonder if it's the power that makes them that way, or if, you know, they were that way and that's how they attained the power. So, in other words, chicken or egg came first. That's another thought. Then I know I'm skipping around here, but the last one is that men on the left, sometimes they get on my nerves with this particular thing here. Okay, now, I know that on the right, you have women that are powerful. Let's take Michelle Bachmann or somebody like that, who to me is just like, if you remember the black guy, Mr. Steele, for the Republicans. She's like one of those, see, we have one too, see? You know? But I wonder, would people like, you know, with the powerful women, well, the notable women in this country, how, oh, I think I lost my train of thought.
We send you some industrial strength ginkgo biloba.
Well, I was skipping around so much. I know what I was going to say. It's that these people, these women that are in power, well, on our side, on the left side, left-leaning thinking people, in other words, quote-unquote liberal thinking people, do the women feel that, and maybe somebody can call in, I'll leave a little time for somebody to call in, but they feel that sometimes men on the left patronize them too much because, you know, they've bent over backwards to, you know, not empower the women so much as agree with everything they say and, you know, codify them, and seems kind of patronizing to me sometimes with some of the men on the left, and I could name names, but I'm not going to. So any thoughts on that? Any of those?
Well, I think it's just learned behavior in a way. It's like, you know, you just, I was talking with someone earlier today, and I recall the phrase a good friend of mine used to say, being treated with a healthy disregard. You know, the idea is that, you know, they just make you feel fine, but there's no real connection to you, and there's no real respect for you. It's
right.
Just that, you know, they're just being polite. But it is an expression, really, of contempt, and to assert their own superiority in the moment, you know, that they have the power to actually allow you to believe that you're being taken seriously, but the joke's on you.
Right. And do you have any thoughts on the NBA Housewives things, those TV shows like that, and why women like them so much?
All these reality shows, you know, on a psychological level, the reason they're so important is that people get a feeling that they're getting into somebody else's life. And they are like a tourist in somebody else's experience. And it's not them, you know, but they are living the story vicariously.
Right.
You know, they don't know the real thing about reality shows, that much of it is staged and scripted. And, you know, these women are basically getting paid to fulfill a script and a need that the again, it's they don't realize that they are actually debasing women and themselves by mm-hmm. going along with it, but it's money and it's exposure. And you will see that for a lot of them, the exchanges, if I participate in these reality shows, I get to launch something, you know, my own line of wines and my own line of clothing and so forth. So the women have basically themselves come to terms with the idea that a little debasing would yield a lot more in the end. You know? Right. And for the consumer of information, we get the privilege of voyeurism. We are viewing people in the intimate moments of their lives, in the way that they are actually living moment to moment.
And what about the powerful women syndrome, like Margaret Thatcher and all these women that, you know.
What makes these women attractive is that they actually exhibit very masculine traits mm-hmm. and still, of course, have membership in the club, you know, but their masculine traits, like Thatcher was resolute. In a minute, she'll declare war on anybody, you know,
right.
But she's perfectly coiffed, wearing her pearls and so forth, nice lipstick and everything else. So
right, she's a kind of woman,
you know, a new kind of woman with old values.
Mm-hmm.
And those old values, it's nothing to do with age. Hillary Clinton is the same way. The masculine aggression, basically covered up with pearls.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People find that tremendously attractive.
Yeah.
Many people do.
Yeah, the statement that Madeleine Albright made about thousands of Iraqi children being worth mm-hmm. it, being killed, mm-hmm. being worth it, and then all the policies of Margaret Thatcher that were like detrimental to, well, just hatred of the poor, you know.
Sure.
These are very unwomanly, I don't know if that's a word, but unwomanly type traits. I mean, women are supposed
But they're not being women. They're states women.
Yeah.
They're not regular women. These are a higher caliber of women. These are global women, and they are stateswomen, and therefore they adopt the behavior and the mentality of statesmen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes them very attractive, because by being this way, they prove to the public of their authority, that they could handle the job as equally as well as any man. But of
mm-hmm.
course, we wear pearls.
Yeah, right. It's just like kind of like our black president, quote unquote black president.
Oh, Lord. Don't get me started.
I can be just as mean and hateful to the black people as this white president.
Absolutely.
Even more.
If not more, so.
Right.
Thanks a lot, DX, for calling.
Thank you, Beatrice.
Well, this has been a really wonderful exchange today. I'm glad that we got so many profound offerings to cogitate upon. We'll return to each other tomorrow. God willing, and the creek don't rise, as they say. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Economic Update with Richard Wolf. Reach me, leadstories@gmail.com or leadstories with Utrice Lead. We'll see you tomorrow, same time.